Today's daf is Membet. We're just going to review one thing before we move on, because that's going to be the basis of what we're doing today. We started with a machloket at the top of Mem Aleph Amud Bet, second line. Avodah kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha. Right, if in Ovei Kochavim, we're going to learn today, there's a bit of a difference, but if in Ovei Kochavim breaks an idol, so we assume that he doesn't consider it important anymore, and therefore it's permitted b'hana'ah. But what if it broke by itself? So Rabbi Yochanan says if it broke by itself, it's still forbidden. Because he says you don't necessarily know that the non-Jew said, oh, I don't want this to be my idol anymore. And Rish Lakish says it's mutar. What we have today is, we started yesterday with a slew of questions. Rabbi Yochanan questioned Rish Lakish, so we're going to continue with a lot of Etivei Rabbi Yochanan the Rish Lakish, meaning he brought a question from a Tana'itic source, and he's going to bring a number of sources, and every time Rish Lakish is going to have an answer, we'll see a certain mantra of a particular answer that keeps repeating itself. Yesterday, in the context of one of the questions, we now are in the middle of a tangent, where they, as one of the responses, they said, Ein safek motzi mide vadai. And then they said, is that really true, that Ein safek motzi mide vadai? And we brought in a question to check, is it really true? And then we said, oh, that's not a question of, that's not Ein safek motzi mide vadai. If you remember, we said, right, there's, what does it mean, Ein safek motzi mide vadai? If you have something in doubt and something you know for sure, so if it starts out as a for sure status and then we're not sure whether something or not, then we can't use the suffix to say, oh, well, let's go with the suffix when there's a vada. Okay, so then they brought a question and they answered it. Okay, so right now we're going to continue with another source that seems to say, Vein, suffix motzi mide vadai, do you really say that that's the case? Vahatanya, we have another case where we saw again where there was a vadai, something that was known for sure, and then some suffix, and we rule based on the suffix. V'hatanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ma'aseh b'shifchato shel matzik echad b'rimon. This is a very odd case, okay, and particularly it was a ma'aseh, so I'm having a little trouble with this case. Rabbi Yehuda says there was a case with a maidservant of a matzik echad. There's two different interpretations. One is Rashi says, gavra alma ve'Yisrael, or it really means alim. It was a gavra alim. It was a violent person. What the connection is to the fact that the guy was violent, not so clear. Some people say it's masik. Masik is someone who deals with olives, and he makes olive, random masik. So it's unclear whether that fact doesn't seem to be a relevant fact in the story. But he was Birimon, that was a city in the Galil. Shehitila nefel labor. She threw a stillborn baby into a pit. Presumably her baby, okay? I don't know if you know this goes on nowadays, where the Chevra Kadisha will often throw, I shouldn't say throw, but the image is pretty disturbing. Sometimes there are cases where Chevra Kadishas will put stillborn babies and they'll bury them sort of in a pit, and there have been legal cases against this. I think it is the default.
Today you're allowed to request.
Right, you're allowed to request that you can ask for a proper burial. The Chevra Kadisha often doesn't let the parents come to the burial, but you're allowed to. There's been legal cases brought up against it, and in fact, you can request to know where the grave is. There was a case of a whole bunch of parents that sued, saying we don't know where the graves of our stillborn children are, and we demand that you find them and show us. And
the principle is that a nephil was never alive; it's not considered
right.
A human being, so therefore, it's a body part.
Right.
And it gets buried with other body parts that were either removed in amputations and things like that. A grave.
Right. So some people claim that the source for that comes from here. The fact that she threw her nephil in there shows that that's the way they would bury nephilim, and that that's the source for the Chevra Kadisha that allows them to do this. What?
From a ma'aseh.
Well, there must be some other sources about it, but I did see a footnote in the Shan scene that said that this is used as a source. This is brought maybe as one of the sources as to why they do it in that way. I assume there's more to it than just this. If it was a shifchai, and it wasn't, and it was a maaseh, and we're going to see it wasn't even clear it was a nefel. So, okay, all the more so. But I thought it was interesting to mention it in this context about what goes on nowadays and the fact that there's been legal cases against this and trying to stop this practice. Okay, so she threw her, presumably her stillborn baby, into the pit. Uba kohen vihitzitz. Now, a kohen, you have to remember, the kohen was known to be both a kohen, okay, someone who would serve in the Beit HaMikdash, which anyway they didn't do at that point anymore. A kohen was also a teacher, and he knew a lot of things. And so therefore, the kohen came, in this case, leida im zacharim nikeva. A woman has tumat leida, and it's a different tumat leida. Right? Even if it's a stillborn, there's still tumat leida. She becomes tameh. For a boy, it's 7 days, and for a girl, it's 14 days. And then there's the demei tohar also. Anyway, he wanted to check for her sake, if it was a zachar and a keva, to know how long she would be tameh. Remember, it's a shibcha kana'anit, but right, she keeps to laws of, because she lives in the house, right? It's not our type of shibcha you might have nowadays. It's a shibcha kana'anit. So he wanted to know him zachar and a keva. Ubama selef nechachamim v'tiaruhu. Now, what was the issue? The question is, he now leaned over this boar, and he was going to become tamei, right? So the question is the kohen tamei or not? Because can we assume, right, it was vadai that she threw her nefel? Now remember where we're going. We're trying to show ein safek motzimi de vadai. But yet, right, we said that, but yet we're going to see here that it was a vadai nefel. I already kind of alluded to what one of the answers is going to be. But it's a vadai nefel, and he now leaned over, and what's the safek? The safek is, and this is why they said he was tahor, based on the safek, mipnei shechulda ubar dilas mitzuyim shan. Right? And what's the issue? If a shechulda or bar dilas are there, they might have taken the nefel, right, and eaten it or dragged it away somewhere. So because there were animals found in the boar, basically you can assume that by the time he leaned over, even though he was actually leaning over to find the nefel, it was likely the nefel wasn't even there. And therefore we can say he's tahor. So what do you see? What?
Can he say if he saw it or not?
So that's a good question. I'm guessing that he didn't see anything, maybe, or he couldn't, it wasn't clear to him.
It says that
clear he didn't see, right? You'd have to say that, otherwise it doesn't make sense, right? If he vada saw it, then you'd have to say it was vada. So now that he doesn't see anything, they say, well, you're tahor. So now they say, "Vahahacha devadai hitila nefel safek garu a safek lo garu." Right? We don't know whether the animal that was all safek. So how do we rule safek motzimi devadai? Right? We see here that you do rule safek motzimi devadai v'kaate, and you said, right, and kaate safek, and the safek comes with motzimi devadai. Okay, so that goes against this klal that we said ain safek motzimi devadai. So again, we're going to have two different options of how to understand it. Lo tema hitila nefel labor, ela ema hitila kimi nefel labor. She threw something in which looked like it could have been a nefel. Okay, some people actually say it was like, there was here, we'll see in a minute. Vaha leida im zachar im nekeva hu katane. They say, how could you say that she threw something that looked like a nefel? Didn't he lean over to see if it's a zachar or nekeva? So hachi kamra, this is what it meant. Leida im ruach hapila im nefel itila. He leaned over to see, was it a ruach or was it a nefel? And the imtim tzala, okay, so what's a ruach? We'll talk about this in a second. The imtim tzalomar nefel itila, leida im zachar im nekeva. And if you want to say, it wasn't, he leaned over to see, was it a nefel, was it something else? So some people say, wasn't it something else? It was like an empty sack or something. Or some people say, maybe it was like the meshfir, you know, maybe she, like water from her embryo. And I was wondering, maybe she miscarried into the boar. I was trying to figure out what exactly this case, that's why the case is a little disturbing. But maybe that was part of the issue, and we don't know what actually came out into the boar. Was it, you know, the placenta maybe they were talking about? It's unclear exactly what this is, but maybe it wasn't actually the baby at all. It's a bit of an unpleasant sugya. So number one, he wanted to check, was it, maybe the whole case was suffix. He didn't know whether it was an nefel, whether it was something else. And if it was an nefel, then he wanted to know, was it zachar or nekeva? That's one interpretation. And that would show then, it's suffix. It's not suffix motzimi devadai. It's suffix motzimi de suffix. That's a suffix. That's okay. Vibay deima, kigon shechulda ubar delas mitzuyim sham, vadai garuhu. It's the exact way we went last time. Either you say, there's no vadai, it's all safek. Or you say, there's no safek, at the end, that was a vadai. So you have vadai versus vadai. It was vadai and nefel, but vadai, the bar delas took it away. Now that's a hard interpretation, because if vadai, the bar delas took it away, unless you say, maybe it goes with what the chari was saying. If you didn't see it, well then obviously it must have been taken away, and then it's not, maybe that must be what they mean. And then it's vadai. Okay, so that was all parenthetical. We got to that because part of the answer of the last case was about the Safek Motzi Midei Vadai. Now we're going to have another question of Rabbi Yochanan Arish Lakish. Etivei. Our Mishnah, Matza Tavnit Yad, Tavnit Regel, Hare Elo Asurim, Mipnei Shekayose Behem Ne'evad. Amai, Hashfarim Ninhu. Again, this case about the Yad and the Regel, they're actually going to bring the answer we already saw. But first, Rabbi Yochanan brings us a question and says, well, if you can add a hand or a leg, well, those are parts that obviously broke off. So how can you say, if those are us, or how can you say that broken pieces are mutar? So Hatir Gama Shmuel, they say, oh, well, Shmuel already explained this Mishnah. Bo'um Dino B'sisam. We're talking about a hand that's on a pedestal. We're not talking about a hand that just b'mikre broke off of something. No, maybe it was even crafted just as a hand or just as a leg. Or even if it was broken off, it now is on a pedestal. It's clear that it wasn't canceled out. Whereas their machloka was about something that had been broken off, and was it canceled or was it not? Etivei, next source. Ovei kochavim, again, question of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Finally, at the end, we're going to have Rish Lakish question of Rabbi Yochanan, only one question. Etivei. Ovei kochavim mevatel ovei kochavim shelo v'shel chaveho. Okay, and ovei kochavim can come and say, this idol of mine or this idol of my friends is no longer an idol. He can cancel it out. B'Yisrael eino mevatel avodat kochavim shel ovei kochavim. And a Yisrael, though, cannot say that an idol belonging to an idol worshiper is no longer an idol. Okay? He can't take away its status. So they say, Amai, why would this be? Tehavi kavodat kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha. Why can't you say, in other words, the assumption is, let's say, right, they're assuming it must have broken, but he has no rights to say that this is no longer has significance. So Rabbi Yochanan says, why not? This should be like, and according to you, Rish Lakish, you say if it's broken. And what's the issue of being broken? The issue of being broken is that we don't know whether the idol worshiper canceled it or not. So in the case of the Jew, right, you could say, one second, if you have, right, you can say, right, you should be able to say that this pesel, you know, was broken and it doesn't mean anything anymore, right? So if, according to Rish Lakish, the bitul should happen in and of itself, okay? And it's all mutar. So Amar Abai, right, the assumption is this must have broken. It must be a broken pesel. So if it's a broken pesel, according to this, the Yisrael can't say it doesn't have status. He can't do the bitul. So if he can't do the bitul, well, if it's in Shtabra Me'ala, no one did the bitul. And Rabbi Meir assumes it's all mutar. And Rabbi Yochanan says it's asur. So Rabbi Yochanan says this proves, if we still view it as asur, it clearly needs bitul. And therefore, in order to say that it's mutar. So Amar Abaye Shepchasa. This is not a case where it broke. It's a case where it got bent out of shape. Okay, I was thinking of a water bottle. Sometimes you have a water bottle and it gets pushed in and you can actually like push it back out after it gets scrunched up. So that's what I think they mean here, Pchasa. Like it kind of gets scrunched down and it could get put back into place. So now we're going to have a little bit of a thing here. So what does Rabbi Abaye say? According to Rish Lakish, the case where the Jew can't cancel it out is when it's not when it's broken. If it's broken, it would be mutar and it would be considered canceled. But if it's just kind of pushed down, okay, or bent out of shape, might be a better way to say it. So they say, that's not a good answer, Abaye. V'chi p'chasa ma'ihave. V'hatnan, and this p'chasa is also problematic. P'chasa means it's like it's broken. How do we know this? V'hatnan, p'chasa, afal pi shelo chasra, bitla. If you scrunch it down, bend it out of shape, even if you didn't break a piece off, or right, then it's canceled out. So meaning it has no significance. So now they want to say, no, that's not, that doesn't cancel out my explanation of this, Abaye says, because hanemile de p'chasa ovei kochavim. If an ovei kochavim goes over to his idol and bends it out of shape, what does it show? It shows he doesn't want to use it anymore. But if a Jew comes over, abal p'chasa Yisrael lo bitzla. If a Jew comes over and bends his thing out of shape, the guy might say, oh, I can get this back into shape and I could still use it. It's not, once something's broken off, there's nothing you could do about it. But if it's just bent out of shape, then maybe he thinks, oh, well, it's not really broken. I could either still use it as is, or maybe I could even fix it. Okay, so therefore, there's a distinction between, and that now goes back to explain how Rish Lakish would read this source. He would say, in Obey Kochavim can cancel out his thing or his own or his friends by by bending it out of shape. Whereas the Jew, if he bends it out of shape, it doesn't necessarily mean that he can't cancel it because the non-Jew who was using it might want to still use it. And therefore, what does this prove? The whole thing has to do with bending it out of shape, has nothing to do with breaking it, and therefore it doesn't prove anything against Rish Lakish. Different answer. V'rava amar la'olam kip chasa Yisrael nami bitla. Now, actually, if a Jew bends it out of shape, he could also cancel it. But what's the issue here? Ela gzera. There's a special gzera here, and this is based on some other halacha. Dilma magbala v'hadar mevatala. V'have avadat kochavim b'yad Yisrael. V'kol avadat kochavim b'yad Yisrael eina b'teila la'olam. He brings up this halacha that if a Jew owns an idol, it can never be canceled. It always has idol worship status to it, and it can't be canceled. And therefore, if the Jew has ownership, now we didn't think this case was talking about the Jew having ownership, but if the Jew has ownership over an idol, number one, if he makes it, for sure, it keeps its status forever, that is clear midoraita. Midorabanan, there's a debate about whether this is a derabanan halacha or doraita halacha. Which then raises the question, why are we making a gzera on a derabanan? So some people say, because of Avodah Zarah, we can even make a gzera on a derabanan. Usually we don't make gzerot on derabanans. But there's a debate about whether this is us or midorait or midorabanan. But the point is that, according to halacha, if a Jew owns an idol, that keeps its status forever. Okay? You can never say, this isn't an idol anymore. And therefore, what's this halacha? If a Jew takes an idol and you know, punches it or, you know, bends it out of shape or breaks it or anything, there's a concern that he might have lifted it before he did that, which is a form of taking ownership, and then he can't ever cancel it. So therefore, we're never going to allow a Jew to be able to cancel an idol. Okay, remember this answer, because remember I said one of the answers is going to keep coming up. This answer of Rav is going to keep coming up now. That every time we have a case, we're going to say, oh, it's because of this gzera of Rava. Okay, that Rava said, because if a Jew owns it, we're concerned. Therefore, if a Jew does something with it, we're not going to allow Beitul to happen because he might, in fact, lift it, attain ownership over it, in which case Beitul can never happen. So because of that, we're going to make a gzera.
Even though all these cases where they get, like, hana'ah from the idols isn't because they're selling it, so in order to sell it, don't they... like, have ownership on it?
No, well, the point is, if they... so, it has to be an idol for them to be under this Isser Hana'ah. If it's a broken piece, and they want to benefit from it, so then it's no longer an idol. So, if you take a broken piece, once it's broken and it's nothing, well, then he can take ownership over it, because it's not an idol anymore. The issue is, if he were to take ownership before it broke, and then break it, right, then he already took ownership. If he just walks over and breaks it without assuming ownership and then takes the broken piece, that would be allowed. But that's where he makes the gzeira. He says, you can't do that because you might actually come to lift it beforehand and then it wouldn't be able to have its status canceled. Okay? So, so they say it's the gzeira dilma magbale, okay, and because of that. Etive, next source. Akum shehevi avanim min hamarkolis. Do you remember Marcolis? We talked about this. It's possibly Mercury, which is a Roman god. The idea is that either Mercury, according to this source, it actually sounds like it was made of rocks, or according to, it could be it was just formed from rocks, or it could be, first of all, he was known as the god of the past, like of the travelers. So he would be on these big roads in between, and if you ever see stones, like these stone formations, some people say it's from that, because people would put, they would throw rocks at him. Remember, that's where this came up in the first place. If you throw rocks, which is sort of a negative act, but you throw it at the Marcolis, which is the way that it's worshipped, then it's forbidden. So people would throw rocks at it or possibly put up these rock formations. So what if you take the rocks from Marcolis, v'chipa behen drachim, v'tari ta'ot, and you use them to make roads, basically. You want to put rocks on the road to make the road, you know, let's say put it over the dirt. Right, it's sort of, right, you think about it, you know, exactly pave with rocks, but in those days, obviously, they must use rocks to pave roads. So you want to pave the road with the rocks. Mutarot, okay? So if the Akum took rocks from Marcolis, the assumption is it must have, you know, the formation must have been broken, and he takes from there. It's mutar because he cancels out the significance of the rocks. But then the Jew can basically benefit from these rocks because they're not considered avodah zara anymore. But Yisrael shevi avanim min amarkolis v'chipa behen drachim v'tartiot asurot. But a Jew who does this, it's forbidden. You might say again, what does Rabbi Yochanan say to Rish Lakish? Amai, tavi kavodat kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha. And therefore, it should be, right? It should be considered, according to Rish Lakish, if it broke anyway, then it's mutar. So why can't the Jew get benefit from these rocks? Hachanami kidderava. You could say the same thing, because Rava, again, would have been concerned that you would have lifted the rocks and taken, right, taking ownership over it. Now here it's a little problematic, because what would you be taking? You'd be taking a rock or two from the Markolis. You're not going to lift the whole thing. Again, they say maybe you would have lifted the whole thing, or maybe even possibly the rocks were part of the, you know, the formation was the idol itself, right? There's a bit of a debate here about whether the rocks are part of the idol itself, or the rocks were just a sign of honor to the or worship to the Markolis. But in any case, you might just say, we're going to keep this gzerah, even though it's not exactly relevant in this case, but we could still say the gzerah applies. Okay, next. Etive. Avodat kochavim sheshifa avodat kochavim litzarko. He takes an idol and he starts scraping, shaving. He shaves off pieces of the pesel. Okay? So, if it's litzarko, okay, if he wants the shavings for himself, if he wanted it to basically shave off the pieces because he wants the shavings, then basically what's he doing? He's canceling the idol and using the shavings for himself. But litzarka, if he's doing it to make the pesa look better, right, for the sake of litzarka is going to be for the idol itself, then asura, right? Then it's forbidden, because obviously he was just trying to make the idol better and the idol's still an idol. But if he was scraping it off because he wanted the scrapings, then the assumption is he was canceling the idol out and using the scrapings, because he wouldn't scrape things off for his own purposes from his holy idol. So therefore, so hi asura v'shifuye mutarim. So if he, I'm sorry, did I skip? Hi v'shifuye mutarim, l'tzorka hi asura, but shifuye mutarim, okay? If he shaved off pieces to make the idol look better, obviously the shavings he had no use for, and he wasn't treating them as holy anymore, so the shavings would be mutarim. But Yisrael sheshipa avodat kochavim, but a Jew who does this, bein litzorko, bein litzorka, whether it's for the purposes of the shavings, or whether it's for the purposes of making the idol look better, hi v'shipuya asurim. Okay? Both parts are going to be forbidden, because again, he has no way to cancel out the holiness of the idol. V'amai, to have kavodat kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha, wouldn't you view this as an avodat kochavim that was broken? Right? It was broken on purpose, all the more so, right? And that was nishtabra me'eleha, and there you say it's mutar. Hachanami kidurava. Again, Rish Lakish can answer. I view it as Rava. Really, there's no inherent issue. It's just that there's this gzeira that we're worried he's going to lift it and take ownership over it, and that would create the problem. Etive. Rabbi Yossi Omer Shochek Vizore La Ruach O Mitil La Yam. Rabbi Yossi says Rabbi Yochanan? Mm-hmm. Where does it say Rabbi Yochanan?
No, in the notes.
ATV.
They explain ATV is Rabbi Yochanan.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Rabbi Yochanan is asking the question now on Rish Lakish again. ATV Rabbi Yochanan, the Rish Lakish, same thing. But now he's quoting. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Shochek v'zore laruach o mitil layam. This is a Mishnah coming up. It says that you can grind up the pesel and throw it into the air or throw it into the yam. Okay, now, Amrulo, they said to Rabbi Yossi, af hi nasa zevel. But if you do this, what will happen? The pieces that you ground up from the pesel, those pieces, can turn into fertilizer. So in essence, you're getting benefit from them. Uktiv lo yidbak biyadcha meumah min acherim. And you're not allowed to do that because you can't benefit from anything of this avodah zarah. So again, what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Amai tehavi kavodat kochavim shenishtabra me'eleha. Again, you could say, these are just broken pieces, right? According to Rish Lakish, the broken pieces are mutar. Of course, if broken pieces are mutar, clearly little dust particles that come from it that are going to work as fertilizer are going to be mutar. Hachanami kidurava. Again, we're going to say like Rava, you can't do this because we're worried that you might lift it and come to, and then once you lift it, it'll be yours, and then you can never cancel.
Michelle,
yeah?
Can I go back to the roads for a second?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know then if you can walk on a road? You know the origin, if a Jew or a Gentile took the stones.
Right, that's a good question. So if the Gentile took it, in other words, again, you can, maybe there's an assumption, you could probably go by the road. Most of the roads were probably paid by Gentiles, and what are the chances are that the rocks they used came from Marcolis? So probably based on that, you can say that, you know, it's okay. If a Jew did it, and what were the chances that the Jew used the Marcolis? It would only be, I would imagine, a road that you know that a Jew took it from the Marcolis that you couldn't do it. But the other assumption would just be that if it's a road, you don't have to start worrying maybe it was made from rocks of a Marcolis that the Jew took. Yeah, this is probably trying to say the Jew shouldn't take the rocks from the Marcolis and build the roads for them. I think that's kind of what they're trying to say. Okay. Etive. There's another question of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yossi ben Yisian omer, Matzat tzurat drakon v'rosho chatuch safek avodah kohavim chatcho safek Yisrael chatcho mutar vaday Yisrael chatcho asur. Okay, again, we're going to say amay tavi avodah kohavim shishabra me'elah. So what's the case here? You find the tzurat of a drakon, which we're going to talk about soon what that is, and his head is chatuch. Okay, now you're not sure, did the Ovei Kochavim cut it off, or did a Jew cut it off? It's mutar. But if vadai, if you know for sure that a Jew cut it off, it's asur. So again, what do you see here? If it's nishtabra me'alea, Rish Lakish says it's mutar, so why would he forbid it if a Jew did it? So again, why would he forbid it? Exactly for all the reasons we keep saying. Hachanami kidu Rava. We're worried about this gzera of Rava. Next source, Etive. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Af lo yirakot biyemot hagshamim, mipnei shanivaya nosheret alehen. Okay. What is this? You have to understand the premise, the beginning of this, which is the Chachamim say you can't plant under an Asherah tree. We've talked about Atzei Asherah. That's a, right, comes up in the Torah. It's a tree that they used, they would worship. If you plant under the Asherah tree in the summer months, so the you're not allowed to do that, according to Chachamim, because the shade, you're going to benefit from the shade, right? That your plants won't dry out in the summer months because the tree is shading your plants, but if you, your crops. But if you do it b'modak shamim, where you're not benefiting from the tree, it's fine. Comes Rabbi Yossi and he disagrees and he says, what do you mean? The nivaya no sheret alehem. And that provides fertilizer. The leaves will fall from this tree, and the leaves will fertilize the crops, and therefore you're actually benefiting from the Eitz Asherah. Now, leaves falling from a tree is clearly nishtabra me'eleha. So again, why should this be forbidden? Amai, right? Tehabe kavodah kochavim shnishtabra me'eleha. So what is Rish Lakish going to answer? Shanei hatam di'ikar avodah kochavim kayemet. V'hash, okay, so they say, the tree itself is kayam still. In other words, when we talked about breaking the idol, and there's, right? So then the idol's already fallen apart. But here, the thing they worshipped itself is the tree. It's there. So even though there's broken pieces coming out of it, it's not ruining the tree. The tree is perfectly intact. So they say, what about hashifuyan, di'ikar avodah kochavim kayemet, v'katane l'tzorkahi asura v'shifuyan mutarin. But you could say the same thing with the shavings. And there we said what? That if the idol worshiper shaved off pieces and kept the idol, right? What did we say? If you do it, one second, right? The idol is still asur, v'shifuya or mutarin. And there you see the idol's still intact, and yet things that came from it are not intact anymore. So what are the answer? Rav Huna Bar Yeshua Amar Lafisha Ein Avodah Kochavim B'Teila Derech G'day Lata. When it's in its actual, right? You, in other words, the Eitz Asherah, you can't compare the Shifuyin. Here, the Eitz is the way it's the way it grew, right? It's still there. It's standing up as a tree. So you can't, anything that comes from that is basically going to be forbidden. Okay, that was the end of all the questions of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Now, finally, Rish Lakish is going to have one attempt against Rabbi Yochanan. By the way, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, you can see the whole sugya leans to Rabbi Yochanan and raising so many questions on Rish Lakish, even though we answer them. Also, there's a general rule about Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, and this falls into that general rule that we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan. Anyway, Eitivei Rishim ben Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan. Kein sheberosh ha'ilan shel hekdesh. Okay, you have a bird's nest on top of a tree of hekdesh. Lo nehenin. You can't benefit from this nest. Velo moalin. However, right, it's only asur midrabanan, and it's not asur midoraita. We've seen this before. You can't get hana'ah, but there's no isur me'ila because me'ila is only on doraita. So it's only asur midrabanan. What's the assumption here? The assumption is the bird's nest. Okay, there's a few things we'll see, but right now the assumption is the bird made his nest from parts of the tree. So if the tree was hekdesh, then the nest has parts of hekdesh in it. Berosha shel asherah. If you make it on an asherah tree, yatiz bekaneh. You can knock it off. You can use you can't use the tree. You can't climb up the tree to get there, to get the nest out, because that will be using the tree. You'll be benefiting from the tree. But if you take a big, tall reed and you know, or some sort of pole and you knock it off, then you can benefit from the nest. Kasal kadatach, kigon sheshavra mimenu etzim vikintabahem. We're assuming that, what's the assumption? The bird took pieces from the tree and made a nest out of them. And what do you learn from here? Vikatane yakiz bakaneh, which means what? According to this, there's broken pieces off the tree that form this nest. And if it's from an asherah tree, right, it says here you can benefit from it. So how could you do that? Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, look, it's like broken pieces and they're mutar. So what does Rabbi Yochanan answer? It's not talking about a nest that was made from that tree. It was a bird who took pieces from a different tree and brought it over. Right? You see birds make nests in all sorts of places, not necessarily in trees. So birds often take pieces from other trees and bring them over. Now, how you would know whether the bird's nest was made from that tree or not, I don't know. But it would have to be a case where maybe you watched the bird make the nest and you saw that, in fact, the pieces of the tree that the bird used to make its nest was not from the asherah tree, and then you'd be able to benefit from it as long as you're not getting any benefit from the tree itself. Okay, and that wouldn't have any contradiction to Rabbi Yochanan because it's not considered, it's not a case of broken pieces from avodah zarah. Daikanami dekatani, and he says, I'll even prove it, because it says, gabe hekdesh lo nehenin v'lo moalin. What does it say by hekdesh? You can't get hana'ah, but there's no isur me'ila. If you took trees from a different tree, right? The bird took the made his nest from a different tree. Hainu dekatani gabe hekdesh lo nehenin v'lo moalin. Lo nehenin midorabanan v'lo moalin midoraita. Why? Dahalo kadishe. Right? It makes perfect sense then to say it's asur midorabanan only. Because the tree itself, right? If the tree was really from the hekdesh, right, let's read the opposite and then you'll see why it's obvious. Eliam Racha Shavrai Tsimi Menu Vikintapen Amailo Moalin Hakadishi. Right? If the bird took it from the hekdesh tree that was sanctified, then of course you couldn't benefit from the nest, because the nest was made from hekdesh. So it would be Moalim Midoraita. So why is it only Asur Midrabanan? It must be because he brought it from this faraway tree. So that proves his answer. So now they say no. Not necessarily, Rabbi Yochanan, it's not a great proof. Because midi iria, hacha bigidulina ba'in la'achar mikanaskinan. V'kasavar em ila bigidulin. We've actually seen this sugya before. There's a machloket about if you say this tree is hekdesh, and then there's certain parts, right, the tree grows all the time. So let's say parts of that tree then grow after you said this is hekdesh. Let's say there were no fruits on the tree, and then the fruits grew. Are those fruits forbidden? So there's a machloket about, is there me'ila in gidulin, things that grew after you sanctified the tree? Is only the part of the tree you sanctified that existed at the time you sanctified it sanctified, and the rest of it is not, and therefore we treat it only with an isur midrabanan. So therefore they're going to say, he holds a me'ila bigidulin. There is no isur me'ila, and that's why, so it could be that the tree was made, the nest was made from that exact tree. And the reason why in Hekdesh it's only Derabbanan is because it was made from Gidulim of the tree, things that grew after he made the tree Hekdesh. So therefore, that's his response. Okay, so now, that shows, what were we up to? his proof is not a good proof. He tried to say, I have a proof for my answer, and it wasn't a great proof. Now we're going to give a different answer of Rabbi Yochanan, that we're not actually talking until now. What are we assuming? You're allowed to get benefit from the nest, right? Because you can knock the nest off and get benefit from it. And the whole issue was, is the nest made from broken pieces of the tree, or was it made from a different tree? And that's how Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlakish would view the case differently. Right? Rabbi Yochanan says it was made from a different tree, and therefore you do see the chivrei of Avodah Zarah is aser. Rabbi Shlakish says it was made from the tree, and therefore you see it's mutar. So now here's a different answer in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Abahu, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, my yatiz, yatiz be'efruchim. You don't knock the nest off, you can knock the birds out of the nest. And you're not going to be able to get benefit from the nest at all. Because the nest is usher, Rabbi Yochanan says. It's just that you can knock out, you know, use your kaneh and knock the birds out of the nest and get benefit from them. Amar le Rabbi Yaakov le Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Tachlifa, Ezbarecha, I'm going to explain to you, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you would say like, Be'efrochin, kam v'kam mutarin. If it's a hekdesh tree, or an Asherah tree, either which way, the Efrochim are going to be allowed to be used. Okay, you can always use the Efrochim, but Bebetzin, Kambekan Asurim. But if you're talking about the eggs are forbidden. And here there's a few different reasons why the eggs are forbidden. I'll give you three different reasons that I found. One is that Rashi basically explains that the eggs need the tree in order to kind of, you know, they need to be in the tree or in the nest, and therefore they need it. The Ravid said it's treated as if it's gidulei ha'ilan, okay, as if it grew from the ilan. And Tosfot says the concern is that in order to get the eggs, you can't just knock them out. So you'd have to climb up. We're worried you might climb up the tree to get them, and therefore the eggs are going to be forbidden because then you benefit from the tree. So there's a few different reasons about why. According to all these interpretations, you can't actually say that the eggs are actually hekdesh, because if they're actually hekdesh, then when they turn to Efrochim, they're not going to be able to lose their kedusha status. So you'd have to say, according to all of them, what they mean is they're asurim, they're like hekdesh. They're treated like hekdesh, even though they're not really hekdesh, because they're not actually part of the tree. Okay. Amar of Ashi, Vefrochim Shitzrichim Li'iman Kibetzim Dami. He adds this one point that if you have an Efroch that still needs its mother, then it's treated as if it's a Beitzat still. It's still an egg, and therefore it's going to be Asur from both. Okay. So, new Mishnah. Hamotzei Kelim, Valehen Surat Hamat, Surat Levanat, Surat Drakon. Okay, I told you we get back to this Drakon. If you find Kelim that have on them an image of the sun, an image of the moon, or an image of, okay, we'll explain it in our basic Hebrew, a dragon, okay, which not everybody understands that this is a dragon. So most people understand some sort of snake, maybe a snake that blows fire, all different things. I wanted to read you the Rambam, because the Rambam and the Perashat Mishnah is very interesting here. He says, Surat Chama v'Levona, Ein inyano shimsa igul v'yomar zeh ha-shemesh, o chatzi igul, and you'll say it's yareach. It's not, oh, you see a circle on an image and you assume that's the sun, or, you know, even a moon-shaped image and you say that's the moon. No, no, no. Ela ba'alei ha-talsam, says, miyachasim lekochavim tzurot ad she'omrim ki tzurat shabtai tzurat zaken shachor muflag v'zikna. The Rambam says, if you see this old man and he's a semel for the sign of Shabtai, the constellation Shabtai, that's what he means. And if you see, and the idea is, according to the Rambam, it's not these images that they're talking about. It's all sorts of symbolic things that people in his time, again, this is all depending on where you live and how you explain this Mishnah. And he basically says, and the Draconi says, it's a Surat Ish, Baal Snapirim v'kaskasim rabim v'gabo, bein snapirav ki kaskasei adagim. Okay, and this Surazo Aitamachubedit Islam, because they would treat it as if it was part of the constellations. Okay, so the Rambam defines this all not like the Pshat here, but that each of these mean an image that reflects the sun, an image that reflects the moon, an image that reflects. Okay, so if you find a kli like this, Yolichem Yam HaMelech. You have to basically destroy the kli, you should bring it to Yam HaMelech, where, you know, the idea was in Yam HaMelech everything rots and, you know, will get destroyed. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, sha'ala mechubadin asurin, sha'ala mevuzim mutarin. It depends. If it was drawn on some respectable item, then it's asur, because we're going to assume that's avodah zarah. If it was drawn on some not respectable item, then it's going to be mutar, because the assumption is it wasn't used for worship. The Gemara says, lemeimra de lahanihu de palche lehu, lemid yachwini lo. The Mishnah specifically mentioned Chama, the sun, the moon, and this Drakon. What about other things, right? There's lots of other images that people worship. And how do we know this? Rimini. Hashochet l'shum yamim, l'shum naharot, l'shum midbar, l'shum chama, l'shum levana, l'shum kochavim u'mazalot, l'shum michael sara gadol, l'shum shulshul katan. That's actually a small worm. It's not shulshul the way we know it. Okay? If you shecht any an animal for the purposes of the waters, the desert, the sun, the moon. Okay, these are all things that people worship. If you slaughter it and say it's for the sake of this, okay, any of these things, this animal you cannot benefit from at all, okay, because it was an animal that was considered worship to Avodah Zarah. So here you see that they worshipped all sorts of things. So why wouldn't you say, now obviously there's a difference between slaughtering it for the purpose of this versus an image written, right, an image drawn. So what do they say? People worship anything they find, okay? People can worship any item, really. And it's one might worship anything, but people only create images to worship. Generally, again, it's really more like a statistical game here. What we're saying is, if you find a kli that had this image on it, the assumption is that most of the images made of, let's say, stars, which weren't on the list, are just made for decorative purposes. They weren't made for the purposes of worship. Whereas most items that were drawn on, again, whether it's the shape of the sun, the shape of the moon, or an image that reflects the moon or the sun, or this dracon figure, those were generally made for worship purposes. Okay, so again, there's this constant, like the statues, is it for beauty or is it for worship? Was it, you know, here you find something on the street, you don't know. So the assumption is, if it's one of those three, you can assume it was for worship. If it wasn't one of those three, you can assume it was just for beauty purposes. Okay, now we're going to have the source of Rav Shesha that we'll start with. But we'll start explaining today. We won't finish up today. Well, it goes into tomorrow's daf. Rav Sheshet Chumrei Matzniata Vitane. He brought together some brightas and he taught it like this. This was the brighta that Rav Sheshet brought. Kol ha-mazalot mutarin. All the mazalot. Okay, here we get into a big thing about mazalot, which is just very interesting because the mazalot, astrological symbols, which you see, the zodiac signs. Thank you. That was the word I couldn't come up with right now. The zodiac signs. You see, I was just in Beit Alpha, Where was I? In En Gedi, in the shul there, and they have the whole zodiac, all the signs. And it's very interesting because to a certain extent, you're going to see here that these zodiac signs were seen as possible Avodah Zarah. And yet, we see it in Batei Knesiot, it's very interesting. So, what does he say? All the mazalot mutarot, chutz mi mazal chama u'levana. Okay, you can have any of these mazalot. Okay, this could be a question. What does this mean? What does it mean? All of them are mutar. We'll get to it soon. Except for the sun and the moon. V'chol ha-partzufim mutarin, and any image is mutar, chutz mi partzuf adam. Okay? Except for the image of a man. This sounds like you can't draw portraits, by the way. Okay? A portrait would be considered a form of idol worship. V'chol ha-tzurot mutarot chutz mitzurat drakon. And the third thing he says, he has three things, which we're now going to have to try to analyze. The third thing is, all tzurot are mutarot, except for the tzura of a drakon. So now we're going to try to understand this brighter better. Amar mar. Kol ha-mazalot mutarin chutz mimazal chama u'levana. Let's start with the first one. Hacha b'mayas kinam. What's the case? Ilema be'oseh. If it means you're creating an image, right? You might say it's different to make a mosaic on the floor of a shul rather than an actual image in the shape. Maybe that's part of the difference here. If you made an image, ibo oseh, kol ha-mazalot mishare, if you make any sort of pesel in the form of any of the zodiac signs or any of, however they define the mazalot here, it's mutar. And only the sun and the moon is forbidden, haktiv. Lota asuniti, and how do they darshan this? Lota asuniti, right? Elohe chesef, Elohe zahav. Lota asun kidmut shamashai hamishamshim lefanai b'marom. You can't make it like any of those who serve me up in the heavens, which means any idol you make with any of these signs is going to be forbidden. So it can't be that you made an image, that you made something in that image, because that's for sure forbidden. Ela pshita bimotzei. So they say very simply, it must be talking about if you find a pestle with this image on it, Again, right. If you form it yourself, for sure it's forbidden. That's idol worship. But if you find one, you don't necessarily assume they were worshiping it unless it was the sun or the moon, okay, or the strakon that we see in our Mishnah. Okay, so that's how we explain the first part. So the first part of the Mishnah is very important. I'm sorry. The first part of this braita he brought is b'motzei. Okay, now we're going to have a problem with that, though, because if you say ibn motzei, ema mitziata, go look at the next part. Kol ha-partzufim mutarin chutz mi-partzuf adam. Ibn motzei partzuf adam mi asur. What you're going to say, if you find something, a sculpture with a person's image on it, but that's forbidden. V'hatnan, right, maybe I wasn't right about saying portraits. It would really be sculptures. Portrait maybe wouldn't be a problem. To form a sculpture in the form of a man might be a problem. So now they say here, if you find a sculpture of a man, of an image of a face, is that forbidden? V'atnan. Hamotzi kelim v'alehem tzurat chama tzurat levanat tzurat rakon yolchem yam ha-melech. What does it say here? Only tzurat rakon in. Partzuf adam lo. It doesn't say the partzuf in an adam is forbidden. So therefore, elapshita be'ose. So now we're going to say, the second part of this braita must be you can't form an image of partzuf adam. But of course you can find one, and you can't assume just because it has an image of a man that a sculpture is going to be someone use it for idol worship.
Oh, sorry, I'm confused. Are we talking about like a sculpture, or are we talking about a kli with a seal on it? Like,
right, that's a good question. Are we talking about where it was a full sculpture? I don't know if it matters necessarily. Or it's something that has the image of a...
This is a utensil with it on.
A utensil with the picture of a man on it.
Or a dracon, yeah.
Right, or a dracon, or whatever it might be. Okay, so I guess it's a utensil with a picture on it. I would assume all the more so if it's a sculpture with a face on it. Mm-hmm. I think that would be even worse, right? I assume. Elapshita beose. So it must be that's beose. Uchid Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yoshua. Okay, and like Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yoshua said before. Or maybe actually we didn't see him yet. I forget. He's gonna come up. We'll see. But then they say, V'ibo se masefa, kol atzuro mutarochut misurat rakon. V'ibo se tzurat rakon mi asur v'aktiv. Okay, you know, let's stop here. We'll get to here. Later they're going to say that the seifa is motzei. And then we're going to have a question. What, this braita? The first case was motzei, the second case was osei, the third case was motzei. It seems like a very unparalleled braita. Okay, so we'll get to that tomorrow and we'll figure it out. Better. Okay, I am not...